that you're gonna regret.
But if you wanna stay in shape,
well, you better hit that.
Chimwits, Chimwits.
That's right, man. You tell them.
Welcome to the Chimwits Podcast. I'm Ryan George.
I'm Justin Guild, a.k.a. Chef Sonic.
And we are the Chimwits.
So, Ryan, what do you think about coffee?
Necessary. Necessary. Probably the first word that comes to mind.
Well, besides just necessary, do you like coffee? Do you enjoy it?
I didn't. Well, growing up, I didn't. But I guess who does? Not many people drink coffee growing up. But my first job was, as you know, at Starbucks.
That's right.
So I acquired... I don't know. Well, I guess I acquired a taste for coffee there. Yeah. And then I also, it became necessary because I lived a few blocks away from the Starbucks. So I ended up working the morning shifts. And then many weeks, if someone called out, who were you going to call? The guy right down the block. So I would get calls at 4:15 in the morning. I still remember my dad like upset because almost every other day it seemed like he was waking me up to say, hey, and you know, this is before cell phones or before I had a cell phone. Yeah, not before cell phones, but just before I actually had a cell phone. He'd have to wake me up to say, hey, they're calling you from work. They want you to come in. So, it became necessary for me. And then now I drink way too much coffee. But to get back to the taste of coffee, we should probably do an episode on coffee. We haven't done an episode on coffee yet, but we should. I do like coffee now. So I do, there's certain types of coffee that I like, and I'm able to kind of, to some extent, tell the difference between different kinds and the different types of tastes and flavors and stuff.
I've had the
Kopi Luwau, I think. That's the cat poop coffee.
Yeah, you served me some.
Yeah, that's right. I did.
It was
pretty
good.
It is good, actually. It's very good. It's like flowery. Legitimately good. It's not bitter. And
it was good.
I don't know if it's worth like, you know, $30 a cup or hundreds of bucks per bag as it's supposed to be.
Crazy.
But it was definitely pretty good.
And so just funny how coffee has really become America's drug, caffeine.
Yeah.
We need it.
Yeah.
We need it to survive.
That is
especially
true.
In cities where, you know, we work often many hours early, late, crazy schedules. So I'm not in love with coffee, but I like it. And unfortunately, when in need, I go to energy drinks, which everyone says they're bad, but I actually read up on it a little bit. It's funny because we're going to do some interesting studies later. Probably should have included this one. Mm-hmm. Is that energy drinks are not necessarily that bad when consumed in moderation.
Uh-huh.
They have, especially Red Bull, right? They have some vitamins, taurine, like just decent stuff. And especially if you don't consume too much of it, it has basically the same amount of caffeine as a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
Or a stronger cup of coffee. What do you think about that?
People tell you it's terrible.
It's
poison, really depends on what's in. I think that the big things
are different types of energy drinks too.
You know, what's in it, obviously. I think there's lots about caffeine being fine and coffee being good for you. But I guess a lot of it comes down to what else is in the energy drink.
Yeah.
They tend to be loaded with sugar, so that's another issue.
Yes.
And other chemicals.
I always drink the sugar-free ones.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure that drinking the.
I mean, you're gonna hear people that are gonna say there's bad, but I don't know that how true that is as far as just the sugar-free being bad. But that's the issue. So it basically comes down to like what else is in the energy drink, how much caffeine, how much sugar is in it. But some of them were, I don't know if they, you know, saw, but some of them were being manufactured or produced with weird chemicals that were not good for you. But I definitely would drink an energy drink here and there. I don't know if it's just a psychological thing or what, but I don't feel the same effect from Red. I like Red Bull. I like the way it tastes, but when, like, if I need coffee or I need caffeine, Red Bull will do nothing for me. Like, I can drink it and go right to sleep.
Wow.
I need a cup of coffee. But I think it's like, I don't know, because the same thing, like, in the morning, like, I can't drink iced coffee. I have to have a hot coffee. It's like, I don't know what it is, but for whatever reason, like, Red Bull does nothing to me.
Well.
But anyway, why are we talking about coffee? Because that's not on our show notes for today.
Well, we are going to include one in the show notes, and it's a competition I am performing in. It's called the Coffee Project.
Okay.
And obviously we're in the New York faction of that. Basically, a bunch of artists, musicians, songwriters were invited to perform. And one artist who I work with, Bill Steely, had a song about coffee. And he was invited to perform. It was a competition.
Mm-hmm.
And we performed on Monday, last Monday, which was 2 days ago. And we made it through to the next round, the finals. So we will be performing on Tuesday Which I guess will be, let me check. I don't know if this podcast is going to go out before then. Maybe we'll try to
get it out. Yes, it always goes out on Monday, so could probably put it out on Sunday, but it'll be out on Monday.
So, well, if you guys hear it, we'll be performing Tuesday.
You're looking at August.
Oops, sorry. Good call. Tuesday the 20th.
Okay. So this will go out Monday the 19th, so, or Sunday the 18th.
If you guys want to check it out, it's a Coffee Music Project. I believe we will be, I think we're performing at Pianos. Mm. So, and that's in New York City. If anyone wants to come out, there was a lot of really great artists, and it was just a really fun time. So, and I'll, maybe we'll win. If we win, we'll, you know, be pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, I think you have a few studies for us.
Yep. I got a couple to go over. So, some interesting... Some that contradict some of the things we've talked about, some that are just kind of confirming the obvious. Mm-hmm. So we'll get right to it. So this is an interesting one. Fidgeting can help prevent arterial dysfunction from sitting.
All right.
So we had a couple about sitting on this one today. So basically this one was done by the University of Missouri. And so we know that we've talked about it many times that sitting for long periods of time can lead to a whole host of health issues. And the part of the reason why is that it reduces blood flow to the leg. And one of the main problems is that it increases cardiovascular disease. So this study took 11 healthy men and women to test the leg vascular function. So basically the way that the test worked is they had them sitting down. One leg was still for the entire test. The other leg would toe tap. I think it was 250 beats per minute. It would be a minute on of toe tapping and then 4 minutes off. So kind of intermittent toe tapping. And then they measured the blood flow to the major artery in the leg of both legs, I'm sorry.
Okay.
To measure their arterial blood flow. And they found a significant increase in blood flow in the leg that was toe tapping.
Makes sense. The leg, it's going to have better blood flow.
So, yeah. So basically the idea for this then is, you know, obviously increased blood flow is important for vascular health. This study, obviously, it was only 11 people, and they didn't, you know, there's no connection with actual real health benefits. But the interesting thing for this, then, it does mean that it's possible that if you know you're going to sit for extended periods of time, there is a way to maybe help to increase and fight off those negative effects of sitting. So obviously, nothing's going to beat actually getting up and moving around or actually exercising. But if you're going to be on a long flight, or if you're going to be, you know, you have to sit at work for long periods of time, there is that option of, okay, I'll just toe tap. And maybe that could help a little bit.
I knew it.
If it is increasing the blood flow, then it's likely then that that it will maybe have some benefits health-wise.
Yeah, I was always a fidgeter.
Yeah.
Back in the day. I could never stay still. I had all this nervous energy. I still am to an extent. But you are too.
Yeah.
You don't even, I always have to do something.
No, I do realize. I know. Yeah, I'm always doing something. I think
everyone out there, I leave stuff around for Ryan to grab. Like I have my wire cutters here. Yeah, I have, you know, a little, you know, keychain or something that I'll leave and Ryan will for sure grab and play with it. So.
Yeah, no, I do. I guess, I've read that. That some kind of, I forget what it's called, but basically kind of doing that kind of, some activity where you're not thinking helps you think, you know, like doing something that, like kind of where you're just, you're not thinking about the actual movement, whether it's like fidgeting or playing with something. And I do that. And I notice I do it, like I'll just grab whatever.
These hand, although these require a little bit more strength.
Yeah, now you have one of those hand things, but the, exercise forearm squeezy things, but like I forget what they're called, but you have to actively think about using it because it actually requires strength. So it's interesting.
Fidget,
so I guess there's
fidget. Feel free to
fidget if you have to. So another one related to sitting. Now this one kind of contradicts some of the things that we've read. So this was published in The Lancet, and it was basically an analysis, an international kind of study that analyzed analyzed 16 studies. So they basically looked at 16 studies.
16 other studies.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Over a million men and women that kind of comprised these kind of 16 studies. So a large group that they covered. And they basically, these larger studies and they kind of separated them into four groups of people exercising at moderate intensity. So what they see as moderate intensity would be 3.5 miles an hour or cycling for 10 miles an hour.
That's so now, moderate. That's the moderate.
Yeah, so that's their that's the kind of group that they were working with. And then they further divided this into four groups. So you had a group that worked out 5 minutes a day. So they met that requirement for 5 minutes a day. And then at the high end, they had a group that met that requirement for 60 minutes a day. So so those are your, and then there were two groups in between. Right, so you had a low end of 5 minutes a day and a high end, or less than 5 minutes a day was low end, and then the high end was 60 minutes plus a day of that moderate intensity activity. So basically what they found was that 60 to 75 minutes of moderate activity a day was enough to eliminate the risks of sitting 8 hours a day. So this kind of contradicts some studies that I've read that say that sitting for 8 hours a day will counter the benefits of exercise, so that you can act no matter how much you exercise.
Was it that it countered the benefits of exercise, or that it was just still bad? That the exercise was still good for you, but the sitting was bad for you.
I have to look up the study again, but I believe that you still suffered many negative health effects. So. Yeah. I don't know if it was as bad or what.
Like, if you would still build muscle, like it wouldn't. Like if you were lifting weights, heavy weights, and you were trying to gain mass, like sitting wouldn't.
You
would still have all the issues with, you know, heart issues, potential blood pressure.
Yeah, we're talking about the main issues with sitting. Yeah, exactly. Like the main health issues, you're dealing with the cardiovascular problems. So yeah, we're talking about that. Yeah, you could sit 12 hours a day, go to the gym, lift, and still build muscle. But we're talking about heart effects. Now the interesting thing though is that basically, 3 out of 4 people fail to reach that level of exercise.
Sure. Well, that's a big deal. So, that's a good deal.
Yeah.
You know, of exercise.
So, but what this study did find is that the risk for health is really more about lack of physical activity or physical inactivity is of greater risk than sitting. So that's the more important thing, and that's where the focus should lie.
That could make sense. So it's basically saying if you sit, maybe you don't sit 8 hours a day, but you sit 4 or 6 hours a day, not including your sleeping, and then you do a tiny bit of walking and you're standing around and you don't do any exercise. So you're just, in general, inactive. That it could be even worse than doing tons of sitting.
Yeah, that's what the findings of this study. So,
well, then we can conclude this from those two studies, from this study. The other studies that it referenced and studies that we've discussed in the past.
Yeah.
The combination of both sitting and or inactivity is bad for you. So no matter what, exercise. And if you have a chance to be a little more active throughout the day, do it.
Yeah.
One thing that I've adopted is standing just randomly. Let's say I'm watching a game. I'll just stand and watch it for 20 or 30 minutes. I'll just walk around. I'll find a reason to walk around. When I'm teaching a guitar lesson, maybe I'll do one lesson sitting. The next lesson, I'll do standing. Mm-hmm. So I'll force myself to walk around. Or something, when I'm on the phone, I have to walk around. I've made it so that when I'm on the phone, I have to walk around. Just these little things, I think, are helping me. I don't know. Maybe I'm not a scientist. I'm not a doctor. I don't know. But I think they are. And couple that with the exercise. So for everyone out there, you never want to use one of these studies as an excuse. Well, see, all I got to do is exercise, and I can still. And now, see, this one study says it doesn't matter if I sit, as long as, you know, if I exercise, it's good, right? We don't want to think about it that way, right? Yes, we know we need to exercise. Well, why risk it? Yeah, maybe sitting. Maybe if you exercise an hour, the sitting might not kill you. But how is it going to hurt you if you stand up a little bit? If you stretch a little bit? Maybe you walk an extra block.
If you toe tap a little bit.
If you toe tap a little bit. There you go. Take a couple extra flights of stairs. Do something, right? It's going to help, right? And why risk it? Why risk it? If doing such a few little things could drastically change your health and give you extra years on your life and better quality of life, why not do it?
Yep. Good. Well said. So
what else we got?
All right. So everyone's searching for the magic bullet. We all want that pill that's gonna make us fit.
Us bigger, right?
We don't have to do anything else. And
some of us don't need that, apparently.
So anyway, This study basically finds that the magic bullet is really just exercise and physical activity, which we know. So basically, if you're looking to fight obesity and cardiovascular disease, it's just regular physical activity. So this is from the Florida Atlantic University, and this is connected to even the two other studies, really, as far as the content. So finds that only 20% engage in the recommended daily activity level.
20% of Americans. Americans. Right, yeah. Does it say age group?
No,
gender?
It's just across age groups.
Gotcha.
64% are physically inactive. So, nope. So that's
according
64%.
To the last study, that is not good.
Yeah, so that's not good. So there are benefits to exercise, you know, beyond the obesity and cardiovascular, right? There's lean body mass, there's muscle. Increased blood pressure, cholesterol, triglycerides, diabetes, lower rate of heart attacks, cancer, energy, sleep, mood, sex life, cognitive, arthritis. There's so many benefits right, to exercise beyond just weight loss and fighting cardiovascular disease. But the problem in our society, and we see this, right, when people want to lose weight or when they want to get, often the first thing they think is diet.
Yes.
So that kind of there's a concern that calorie restriction is the focus of calorie restriction becomes the focus of any kind of quote fitness program or weight loss program, and it's more important to exercise, but that gets kind of
overall health.
Yeah.
Because people confuse your physical appearance with health.
Yeah.
You can't help it. If someone's thin or very thin, or doesn't have much fat on them, you assume they are healthy. You haven't thought, well, maybe they weren't very healthy and they went into some crazy crash diet where they restricted their calories to 600 calories a day and they lost a bunch of weight. Mm. That's not very healthy.
Yeah.
We don't look at someone and say, look at them. They must not be able to think very well because they're not eating right. We never think that, but it could be the truth.
Yeah.
We never think, maybe this person is bones or their joints have now been affected based on lack of nutrition. We don't think that. We see someone who looks thin, maybe they're attractive, especially if they're attractive. We assume they're healthy, but it's just not true, right? People could, it's not true. They could be healthy, but you just can't tell just because someone appears to not have a lot of fat on them.
Yeah.
And this, I think this is exactly what's being said. It's so important to exercise. Now, this person might be exercising like crazy and not eating very much.
Yeah.
As you've seen. And in a short term, maybe you'll lose some body mass, some fat, but that can't be good for you in the long term.
No.
I don't care what anyone says.
Yeah. And so, basically an interesting thing for most people is as little as a 20-minute brisk walk. So just a brisk walk can burn up to 700 calories a week extra. And then it reduces the risk of heart disease by 30 to 40%. So just showing that your activity level can play a huge role in your health. So it's not just about dieting. And then another interesting thing, which again, we know, is weightlifting is incredibly important. So we tend to stress,
resistance
we're
training.
Talking about heart health or just health in general, we tend to stress the cardio,
aerobic,
but the weight is important too, because that's going to help you build muscle, which will increase your lean body mass. And it also helps to control the weight because you burn more calories at rest.
Now, is anaerobic activity, which weightlifting is, also good for the heart?
Yes, it does have some benefits for the heart.
Okay.
So there are some, but the
and we also know that you can lift weights in an aerobic fashion too.
Yeah, but the That's more important, about, but yeah. we're kind of we'll separate them for now. So we'll say that the cardiovascular activity is more for the heart. The weight training is more for muscles. Obviously, there's overlap, but the weight training is important because you're by the more muscle you have, the more calories you burn at rest.
Yes.
So if you're looking to lose weight, you weight training and cardio is incredibly important. Then another interesting thing I saw in the study is that it says that $24 billion is spent in healthcare expenditures in the U.S. So just a little bit of activity can go a long way.
Yeah. Now that could be misleading because we don't. That could be due to.
Oh, sorry. Relating to obesity or health. Yeah,
relating
to physical inactivity. I don't know how they came up to that number, but that's the number they came up with. So. It sounds right. I could believe more. I could believe less. I guess.
Well, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Right. It could even be, I guess we don't know, but that sounds like it's a high number, but I could even believe it to be more, because if you think of even indirect causes of someone, you know, being inactive, obese, and all the issues that come with that affecting other people. Who knows?
Yeah.
Right. It's I guess that they came to that number somehow, but it's really true what prevented it, and there's a big push for what we call, you know, what people are calling preventative medicine, mm-hmm. and I encourage everyone to look up what that means. I find so much of it has to do with exercise. Obviously, a controlled diet, not an unhealthy crash diet, mm-hmm. right? But a reasonable diet, education, knowing what foods to eat, perhaps supplements, vitamins, if that may factor in, and just a good healthy lifestyle. It's crazy what a good healthy lifestyle can do for you, and it's everything.
Mm-hmm. So. Well said again.
Right. Well, it's like we're, yeah. we're preaching to our own choir here.
Well, hopefully not. Hopefully there's some people who want to get on the wagon and are listening, or people that kind of are on and off or do the yo-yo thing that at least will, you know, one way to stay accountable in addition to helping our iTunes rankings is if you keep listening, even if you fall off the wagon, at least it kind of keeps you accountable. Keeps fitness at the forefront. So if you can do something to keep it there, then you just kind of check in every week and then eventually you get back to it. Or something clicks. Like, you just know, maybe you never know. One day something, there's a topic or something that comes up that just, it clicks and it works and makes sense. Unfortunately, that's a challenge, but you know, it's also why the fitness industry exists and makes as much money as it does, is because people have a hard time keeping up and maintaining kind of a consistent level of fitness and health. And
that's why we're here.
Yes.
To help you guys maintain.
Yep. So the next study, so we got two more for you. So one is, this was also what was interesting to me. So I know a lot of people, I've worked with a lot of people who had meniscus injuries over time. The meniscus are discs of cartilage in the knee joint. It's basically on both sides of the knee, and they basically act as shock absorbers. And it's very easy, not easy to injure, but it happens often. You have like more acute injuries, like, you know, if you twist your knee.
What's an acute injury? Just for
Let's see. How would I? Something that happens like in the moment. I would say the best way to think of it is like if you're doing something, you twist your knee, right? That happens in the moment. Versus, like a wear and tear type of injury. Gotcha. So if you're, let's say, the other common injury and common way people do the meniscus, let's say you're a runner and you run a lot, whether it's a bad form or maybe you just have the cartilage is just not that strong. One of the cases, over time, you're just going to deal with wear and tear. You wear and tear on the joints, you're constantly pounding on pavement, and the joint just start, or the meniscus starts to wear. So you've got the more acute injuries and you have the gotcha. Those that are just kind of happen over time. So generally the treatment is arthroscopic surgery, and as long as I've been training, I've met many people who've had meniscus problems, and they go in, they get arthroscopic surgery, and then it's one of those words that's hard to pronounce, and then it makes it harder to pronounce when I start thinking about it. But you know, you get the surgery. It's, for the most part, it's minimally invasive, and you're back to working pretty quickly. I think it's a surgery where you're not on crutches, you're walking right away. You can get back to exercise pretty fast, but basically, this study is saying that physical therapy is just as effective as therapy. Okay. I mean, as surgery. So this one was done in Denmark or Norway, but the patients, it was 140 patients in Norway and Denmark, and they basically kind of randomly chose to go into two groups. One group was for surgery, and one group was for the physical therapy. And what they found was that at the end of a year, I believe, at the end of 2 years, there was similar progress in both groups as far as like pain, function, and symptoms were concerned. So the progress was essentially the same in both groups, except that the therapy group actually had more physical strength in the knee.
That makes sense.
Over that time. So, I think the therapy group met, it was 2 to 3 times a week of PT over 12 weeks versus, again, the arthroscopic surgery for the other group. And so basically there was, the only thing that the study noted is that, so basically the results or their conclusion is that, you know, physical therapy is going to be just as effective for meniscus tear. And since it's such a common injury, that's good to know, because commonly again, the treatment is right away surgery. And most people I know that have had that type of an injury have had the surgery. So it's good to know that there is that option, which can save on healthcare costs. And
I suppose so, but I am going to be a huge skeptic.
Why?
Of this one. Because I am always, and there's a lot of people that disagree with me. There's a lot of people that are not into Western medicine. They do not like going for procedures. They're scared of them. I am a big fan of case by case talking to your doctor and not just reading a study that encompasses someone that is not you and looking at your issue. Are all meniscus tears the same?
Well, we agree on that. I think obviously if your doctor...
Yeah, it's great that there's another option. Now, if your doctor says PT or surgery are equally as good, that's great. And then you can say, oh, well, the study also said that. But things go get for me into an uncomfortable territory when someone reads a study or they read something on WebMD and they come to their doctor who's a professional in the field and has done tons of surgeries and knows this patient particular and knows how each individual case is different. And someone comes in and says, well, I read that this study says PT is just as good. Or I read on WebMD that you don't have to go for surgery if you don't want to.
You've got
to
look at the source of the study, who's involved, what the parameters of
the study is not good. The study could be perfectly legit.
Okay,
it's just that it's a different case.
This isn't a study. Like, this isn't like some quacky, like rub some kind of oil on your knee and it'll get better. So we're talking about legitimate form, legitimate. So it's not like an anti-Western medicine thing. You know, it's a legitimate physical therapy versus surgery. It's like anything else.
It's a legit study.
Like, for example, you know, any kind. There are some situations where, you know, there was a treatment for some kind of an injury or procedure that years ago would have meant you're on crutches for 6 months and they have to go in and like destroy your knee for whatever. Yeah. And now they, you know, it's a little, you just go in, you zip and you're done. Yeah. So, I mean, that's just medicine. Yeah. The same thing with this, meniscus tear. It's not an invasive surgery. It's not something where they're going in reconstructing your knee. So I'm not too skeptical of it. Plus,
I'm not skeptical of the study. The study sounds perfectly fine and legit. Yeah. My whole thing is when people read studies or what someone else says in a context that is not their own.
But that's a whole different thing.
So, yeah.
So you're thinking of something else. You're thinking of that situation which I know doctors and physical therapists who go through this all the time, where, you know, somebody reads they have some weird symptom, they go on WebMD, they read it and they're sure that they have that problem, or they are diagnosed with something and then they go online and they go through that rabbit hole and they find, well, what's the treatment? So that's a whole different thing. I think, obviously you have to, at the end of the day, you have to trust your doctor or your therapist. And if you don't, then you can go get a second opinion, but they're an expert for a reason. So obviously if you go in and they say you have a meniscus tear, but the one instance where surgery is recommended, even according to this article, is for if you're young. So if you're young and you have an acute injury, they do say it's good because it'll help you continue with your sports. So that's the one case where it is recommended to get the surgery. But in general, if you do have a meniscus tear and for whatever reason the doctor says, I think we need surgery, you listen to the doctor. Maybe it's worth it to get a second opinion. Maybe it's worth it to say, hey, I've been reading, and you can engage in a dialogue with your doctor. But at the end of the day, you know, the other issue is, and this is a larger issue that we obviously with these studies we find, is that things change constantly. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the actual professional is behind on what the more recent research is. It's hard. Even for me, I'm constantly, you know, part of going through these studies is to learn for myself, because everything's changed so quickly and new things come out. And then I'll tell somebody one thing today, and then I'll read a study in 2 weeks that's going to contradict what I'm telling. So what's right, what's not right, and how much are, you know, the doctors or therapists keeping up? I don't know. That's an individual thing. So I think in some way, it is good to engage in that dialogue. It is good to say, hey, I read this study that came out. Can you tell me, what do you think? Do you think, is surgery really necessary? Is it not? So yeah, I think we're on the same page with this, but I don't think, I wouldn't be too skeptical. And even like the group that put together this.
No, I'm not skeptical it includes orthopedic surgeons, physiotherapists.
So
the study is not, that's not what I'm skeptical of. The study I'm sure is great and makes perfect sense. My whole issue is the way people use studies and use information.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Out of context.
Yeah, but that happens all the time.
Yes.
And, I mean, it's just that part of it, unfortunately. All right. So we got one more interesting study. This one maybe is a little more relevant to anyone who's in a gym exercising. So most people have exercised or used or have seen resistance bands, right? So resistance bands are the, you know, if you don't know, are elastic bands. As they stretch, they increase resistance. So they're a great tool to use by themselves. Because, you know, if you're in a place where you don't have access to equipment, you can do a variety of exercises. As you move the bands, it increases resistance. Mm. So it's a great, again, a great tool to use. Another thing you can do is use it to kind of augment your own workout. So try to give an example. Let's say you're doing a bench press. So you're lying on the bench. If you have some kind of mount or something to secure the band on the floor, you can hook a band up to the floor and then wrap it around your bar. So as you're pressing the bar, you have the added resistance from the band. The band's pulling down on the bar, so there's this extra bit of resistance. So basically, this study was trying to look at the benefits of using a resistance or elastic band with exercise. So the study took 8 rugby players and 8 recreationally trained people or subjects, and they worked out under 2 conditions. So first was a bench press, regular bench press with like I described, but without the band, at 85% of their 1 rep max. So basically what that means is if you take whatever the heaviest weight you can do for 1 repetition, it would be, then they just do 85% of that number. The second condition that they worked out under was the same, but they added an elastic band. Now, what they did, it was still 85% of the 1 rep max, but the band would account for 20% of that. So you would kind of take, if the weight on the bar, let's say, would be 20% less because the band would cover 20%. So you're still at that, technically, they still should be at about 85% of their 1 rep max, but with the band included. So what they found was an increased range of concentric movement with the elastic band. Now, what that means basically is that as you accelerate the bar, it's not moving as fast, but the range that you're actually working, you have more range to work with. So I didn't describe that well at all. So when you lift a weight, if I press the bar, as you approach the top of that press, you have to start to decelerate the bar. Otherwise, you're going to throw the bar up, right? So as you start to decelerate, you know, during that little last portion, you're not working concentrically anymore. You're kind of taking a little bit off. You're slowing down to pull the weight back down. So by adding the band, that deceleration happens later in the movement. So you increase the range with which you're actually producing force, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So you have an increased range, increased concentric movement. And the athletes, they found 35% increase or 35% increase in strength versus the non-athletes. So it maybe works a little bit better for if you're athletic, but you know, still helps you if it helps more if you're an athlete participating in the sport, but if you're just a recreationally trained person, it's still going to help you.
Okay.
So basically they found that this is, it's really good. It's good for athletes. If you want to train for strength and power, then augmenting your kind of training with this resistance band can actually provide some benefits to your strength.
Now, do you think it's the fact that it's the resistance band itself, or it's that a variation? You know, we often talk about doing variation. Yeah. Is that it? Or maybe a combination of both, that the resistance band is good and the fact that you're doing a variation in combination helps.
I think it's a combination of both. Yeah, okay. I think that where I like this, so the way that it's set up is it's essentially the same weight, except that you have the resistance
another
band.
Layer
so
on.
When it comes to strength, you have a couple of variables. Like strength is you're lifting, you're just lifting a weight, right? Yes. It's like you're moving a weight. There's no real consideration for time when we're talking about overall strength. If I have if I have 100 pounds and I'm benching it, we're not looking much at time for my strength. So where time comes into play is when it comes to power. So if you're trying to generate power, I want to move the weight up as quickly as possible. Hmm. Now, when it comes to strength training, slower sometimes can help, because if I'm able to generate power over a longer period of time, then I'm working harder to do that, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm moving slower, I have to control the weight for a longer period of time. So in a way, I'm working a little bit harder. So by distributing things a little bit more evenly with the band, it helps you to develop strength over the entire range of motion. Versus
with strength or power over the
strength,
range.
Strength. Okay. I mean, you're going to generate some power.
And power as well.
So the other thing is, here's another benefit. I'm not really articulating this as well as I should. So by, based on where you are in the movement, your body's just levers, right? Like levers and muscles helping to move the levers. So depending on where you are in a movement, certain parts of a movement are going to be much harder than other parts of a movement. So when you're doing a free weight exercise, you're kind of, part of it to account for is like your joint angle. Definitely. And how that's going to help you move, with the movement. Now, by adding the band, if I'm just doing a free weight, that resistance never changes. If I'm just doing a bench press, the weight of the bench never changes.
Yeah.
A lot of it is just me relying on my joint angles. With the resistance band, because it increases resistance as it stretches, it's going to allow you to as you press and
it
as you
forces
as,
you yeah, to use different
as,
muscles.
Well, not different muscles, not necessarily different muscles, but
or
as
different angles, so basically, different
with parts
the bench
press,
of your strength.
As you press up, you increase your kind of mechanical advantage. Mm. So you become, your body is in a better position to bench press as you extend forward as you extend up on the bench press.
Gotcha.
So by increasing the resistance of the band, you're making that movement harder as you increase.
It goes.
So it kind of in a way
it changes
to
the
some extent
a little bit.
It offsets the increased mechanical advantage, so thereby kind of giving you a little bit of more, you're working a little bit harder throughout the movement. So probably should have thought about this or thought about how to explain this better,
complex.
But basically that's what it is that the band just allows you to work a little bit harder throughout the movement, because instead of giving you that load right off the bat, you're increasing the load as you
go,
press, right? Which makes the movement a little bit harder.
So now the band to me it resembles cable. What's really the why not say, well, what's the deal? When
like
I can do a band, why don't I just do it with cable type press?
Like the cable crossover machine, right?
Something like that. Yeah.
So that's a good question. So basically, again, the main difference is that the band increases resistance as you're going through
the
movement,
the
right?
Throughout.
Cable's always the same. Now the benefit of a cable is the angle that you're moving at. So again, when we're doing free weight training, if I'm doing anything with a free weight or body weight, then anything going up, you're working. Right? If I lift a dumbbell, as I go up, I'm working. So the direction of resistance is always down, right? It's always perpendicular to the floor.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's always the direction of resistance. So in some exercises, that makes it challenging to perform. You have to contort your body and put yourself in awkward positions in order to do the exercise to work the muscle that you want to work. With the cable, the benefit of the cable is you can set the machine up at an angle that maybe is kind of advantageous to working whatever body part you want to work. Right? If I want to work my chest,
you can go forward.
I can set
than have to go up
rather than lying back.
Yes.
Yeah, right. So anything with free weight, I have to go up. So if I want to work my back, I got to pull up. If I want to work my shoulders, I got to press. So anything you want to do, you've got to put your body in a position to work the muscle. If you're using a cable, you can set the cable up in a position to work the muscle, which can be beneficial for a lot of different exercises. It increases the angle. Also, like the part of how a muscle works and working a muscle maximally is the angle that the muscle fibers are kind of situated, and if that's running in line with the angle of resistance. So this gets a little bit more technical, but if I really want to maximize, the angle, if I want to maximize like my bicep curl, then I'll set the cable up at an angle that's, you know, that relates to the angle that the fibers are running. Mm-hmm. And not every muscle has fibers running exactly the same direction. But again, there are ways to like maximize your work based on where you set the cables up. So that's one of the benefits of having a cable machine. But it's completely different from bands now, because again, the bands increase the resistance.
Would
as
there
you
be
move.
A way? You know what I'm thinking.
No, I don't.
To do both cables both. And bands to combine that.
Oh, well, I mean, I guess so. I guess you can attach a band to the rack.
Would there be a benefit to that as well?
This principle, the idea is that, as far as I know, I think the idea of the benefit of the band kind of augmented exercises is that you increase the resistance you kind of gradually increase the resistance as you go through the range of motion. So you get, again, you just get a more even, even strength output throughout the range. So I would see theoretically it should apply to any type of exercise that you're doing, any type of strength exercise.
Might be getting a little off topic. But what is your opinion on, I guess it's similar, it's related on alternative weights, like for instance putting the two chains on a bench press. Is that really any different from doing weights, or maybe combining like you putting bands on your arms and doing a free weight, mm-hmm. which is like you're using the bands, you know, the resistance, and you're combining
anything can be beneficial. I think that as long as you're not injuring yourself, anything can help. I mean, the chains kind of apply the similar theory as the bands, right? Like you, when you have if you're benching or squatting with chains,
although they're not
again, the idea here would be, let's say you have a bar and you've got chains attached to it, but the chains kind of are on the floor. As you go up and it lifts, elevates more and more chains off the floor, theoretically the weight gets heavier and heavier. So as you go up through the movement, again, you're adding resistance to the movement, making it harder as you go through it. So chains kind of, in theory, work very similar. The idea of using chains would work similar. But again, any modality is fine as long as you're doing it safely, and it adds variety. So now there's another article I read. We're not going to get into that because this would leave a whole thing to itself. But kind of on that whole, because I mentioned variety. Variety is important psychologically and also over time. But then there's a whole kind of muscle confusion idea where you always want to confuse muscles. And that is kind of bunk, as they would say. I think I didn't read this article. It was referenced in the Skeptic's A Guide to the Universe, which is a really good podcast. Oh. And I saw the article, or they referenced it. I read the article. It's actually very interesting. It's something that I would like to talk about. But yeah, the idea of muscle confusion is kind of is BS.
Sounds like a good podcast.
It's a great podcast, but we'll get into that later. But yeah, it's a great article. They mentioned it, I believe, on this past week or last week's episode. But if you don't listen to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, it's really good podcast.
I guess one last thing. You hear this sometime of carrying awkward weights, like sandbags and stuff like that. Yeah. Is there benefits of trying to lift a heavy bag?
Sure.
Something that's really hard to carry?
Because they all have benefits. It depends on what the application and what your goal is. If your goal is just hypertrophy or building muscles, you probably will be more effective just doing traditional weights. If the goal is more athletic or you have a job that requires lifting certain, you know, lifting awkward weights, then that might be beneficial. I think the bigger thing with anything dealing with like kind of an awkward and a heavy load, the main issue is just injuring yourself. You know, if you're not really properly trained and you're picking up huge sandbags, or even if they're not huge sandbags, but if you're picking up a 10-pound or 20-pound sandbag with bad form, it can lead to injuries. So I think my bigger issue, you know, regular weights are very, you know, they're perfect. They're symmetrical. They're the width of the bars just right to grip. They allow you to, you know, grip and move and lift in ways that are work for the body. Mm-hmm. Where if you're doing that same thing with sandbags or awkward weights or logs or whatever, it just creates potential problems that you want to make sure that there's a reason why you're doing it, and that you're doing it safely or under, you know, proper supervision, or that you progressed to doing it.
Gotcha.
All right. Cool. All right. So, I guess one more thing. We're going to start doing, we're going to do an exercise of the week. So basically what we'll do is we'll talk about it a little bit very quickly, and then I will post to our Instagram so you get to see the exercise and some little more information on which is the_gymwits on Instagram. So the exercise of the week this week is a side plank. So side plank is one of my favorite exercises. It's one of the things that works. It works the obliques, which muscles kind of on the side of your trunk. And it's one of the exercises that kind of gets the highest like activation level of that muscle. And there are a lot of different ways you could do it. You could do it like a static plank and hold. You could do it for repetitions. You can work other exercises into it. It's one of my favorite kind of most dynamic exercises. Now, it's not the greatest exercise in the world, but one that I enjoy doing and I think most people can benefit from. So again, check out our Instagram, the_gymwits, and you'll get more information on the side plank. All right. Well, that's it.
You know where to reach us.
Yep. Thegymwits.com has all of our stuff, including our Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all that.
Download the app.
Convincing
everyone to download the app. Now it's available for multiple platforms.
Not yet? Yeah.
When do you know when it'll be available?
Soon. Takes maybe 6 or 8 weeks, actually. So,
we're getting close.
Getting there. But definitely on iTunes. So if you have iOS, you can download it now on an iPad or iPhone and have the Gymwits on your iPhone.
It's great.
So, all right. Well, that's it. I'm Ryan George.
I'm Justin Guild, a.k.a. Chef Sonic.
And we are the Gymwits.